Hi, I'm Christine Aller. Twice a month, for almost 2 years, I've been inviting my clients and mastermind members to join me for Mindset Monday sessions, group coaching focused specifically on shifting limiting perspectives and plugging mental energy leaks. What follows is a sampling of the guidance I have given in our sessions held in June, July, and August of 2020. All of these recordings are used with the permission of the participants. Minor edits have been made to preserve their privacy. This compilation is offered to you as a tool to help you determine whether or not I would be a good match for you as a coach. Of course, in my deeper dives with individual clients, I also roll up my sleeves and dig into creating strategic plans of action tailored to your goals, circumstances, and the texture of the life that you desire. But mindset is a vital and influential part of achieving anything, everything. So I hope that whether we work together in the future or not, this recording provides you with some useful food for thought. Thanks for listening. I love that we're spending this time together. Start the recording cord because it is 10 a.m. Mindset Monday. It's 10 a.m. on Monday. It is 10 o'clock. Welcome. All right, Mindset Monday. It is 10 o'clock, and here we are. What's interesting about, but why I feel this work is so important, I refer to it as mental flexibility, having a flexible mind and to be able to see different sides of something. Another word for that is imagination. And it's so confusing and frustrating to me, baffling almost, but probably because it comes naturally to me. And part of what I loved as an actor is putting myself in somebody's shoes. And the failure of imagination to not be able to see something from someone else's perspective is part of what contributes to all the things that we're dealing with, from masks to racism to all the isms and the stuff that is causing this inflection point in our history of the world, really, and certainly our world. So that is why I think that this kind of work, as we practice it on the little things, the mental flexibility about, well, what's a different way to see this and what's a different story I can tell myself, I feel that that helps loosen up the mind so that we have a more flexible and stronger muscle when we're confronted with having to unlearn things that we thought were true or right or just or the way things were and the history and all of that stuff. So this is how we build that muscle for the larger things. And as an example of that, I think a helpful shift in story that I came across in Glennon Doyle's book Untamed, she says, the story of despair is the heartbreak is too overwhelming. I am too sad and too small, and the world is too big. I cannot do it all, so I will do nothing. So that's the story of despair, but you can shift that to a story that feels more courageous. I will not let the fact that I cannot do everything keep me from doing what I can. This is a forum, usually, and I can only do what I'm capable of doing, where we are usually examining the smaller things, the irritants, you know, the petty angers and just the stuff where we're hemorrhaging energy that's unnecessary. And I think that's vital work because this is what I've been talking about, of plugging the energy leaks of the small, inconsequential or smaller, more inconsequentialer things, so that we have the energy to use towards things that are vital and important. So that's what I see us and me doing here and contributing here. The floor is open if you'd like to ask something, express something.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
I can totally relate to what you're saying in regards to like wanting to get things done and wanting to have a schedule and, you know, being on top of my deliverables. And then I just kind of like throw up my hands and I'm like, F it. Not that nothing's getting done, but I'm like, why the F are you stressing? Because I'm very much alike. If I give my word, I'm going to keep my word. If I give a schedule, I'm going to, you know, all of this stuff. And I'm like, none of this stuff matters right now, which is so hard for me because it's kind of how I operate, you know? This week, I had to pull back and all the folks that checked in on me and texted or emailed and I did a lot of doom scrolling, which is a new phrase I learned.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Doom scrolling. And consuming a lot of news and media and videos and articles and reposting and sharing and highlighting and learning and unlearning and teaching and having conversations that I didn't want to have and being exhausted and still wanting to be on top of stuff. And I'm like, it's okay if I'm not on top of stuff. Nobody's on top of stuff. The world is upside down. But it's this balance because I still have work or commitments. And saying no has been a lot. Like I made this commitment to myself 2 weeks ago to not take on anything else because, you know, I have more than enough on my plate. I don't have the energy. And I've acknowledged that a lot too. Like I took a nap yesterday at like 5 o'clock.
I'm going to talk about three things. You just sharing that. I took a nap yesterday. There are a lot of people in this world who deserve naps right now. And that is also part of you claiming your space and claiming your healing in the world and claiming the fact that your worth doesn't come from your productivity. That's a nice concept. But what does it look like to actually integrate that into a life? And you, by doing that, is rebellion. It also gives other people courage. It's setting a really good example. Second thing, I encourage you for a while. I would do this experiment for at least a year. I think you need to give your word in a slightly different way going forward because you have been admirably giving your word rock solid, golden, and then doing what was necessary to fulfill that. Because that was part of the way you defined integrity for yourself. A, congratulations for defining integrity for yourself, because a lot of people don't even take that step. So applause there. But there are times when you commit to something, usually times when it's bigger than yourself or other people relying on you, and you do pull it out no matter what. But those should be very few and far between times when you deplete yourself to cross a finish line. You need to be able to do that. I worry about people who aren't able to do that, but I also worry about people who that's how they cross every finish line.
Yeah.
So for at least a year, what if when you gave your word, you gave it with context? At this moment in time, I can do this. I think I can do it by this time, but I just want to acknowledge that I'm living through a very traumatic time in my life, and I may be impacted to a degree that might surprise you at times and surprise me at times, and things might have to shift. So I just will let you know that I will give you as much notice as possible. I will always be clear on where I stand and where you stand so you're not waiting to hear from me. I'm not going to ghost you, but I just can't guarantee my internal resources at any moment in time right now. But chances are that deadline will work. My muscle for that kind of communication was built when I was an actor who was an organizer, and I had to tell all my clients, like, look, if I get an audition, I'm going to have to leave. But here's what I'll do for you, and here's what I'll, you know, here's how we'll do this. And it happened like twice, I think, but it was already preset in their mind that this could happen. So I would encourage you to start giving your word in that way. That's a very honest way to give your word. about something without revealing, you know, any detail about anything.
Thank you. I need that. Thank you. You know me so well.
The third thing is you mentioned, and we don't have to go into this if you don't want, but having conversations that I didn't want to have.
Yeah.
Do you know how to get out of having conversations that you don't want to have? I think that would be a really good tool for you to have in your toolkit.
No, I don't. Yeah. How do I do that?
Well, let's see how you do that. I understand that sometimes you don't realize you're having a conversation you don't want to have until you're in the conversation that you realize now, I do not want to have this conversation. And now you're like, now I'm in the middle of a conversation I don't want to have. And sometimes those conversations, you're not the one driving the conversation. Usually if it's a conversation you don't want to have, you're not the one driving. So you're just like, oh God, now they're at the steering wheel and how many more questions are they going to have and how long and how many diversions are they like, what, when is this going to end? And you feel not in control and you don't want to be a bitch. I get it. You know, what's your concern with why you don't end it?
Yeah, it's wanting not to seem rude or hurting their feelings, but then it puts me in a bad way or it diminishes my needs and my feelings. So I get to speak up for myself and totally be fine about it.
This is a really important conversation because this time in history for you personally is your time to make a definitive shift in how you show up in this world. And I'm not saying that and you're not showing up in the world. I'm just saying a shift in how you're showing up in this world.
Yes.
You've been showing up in many respects, wonderfully in this world. That's why I like you. I'm like, oh, she's on it. She's good. She's reliable. Like, I just like your character and you're a character, but I also like your character. However, I don't want to like your character at the expense of you. Me liking your character at the expense of you and your energy and your creativity is not worth it. It's not worth it for me. And it's not certainly not worth it for you. So part of what is being begged for at this moment, equity, equality, this is what we want the world to be. And your greatest contribution is for you to create that within your world. Of I show up in my life and I show up for people and I show up, but not at the expense of me anymore. Your personal act of rebellion, your personal act of stepping over the line that has been drawn in the sand now of like, are we going to move forward or are we going to stay? In the white people's case, it's I'm stepping over the line by unlearning and by helping more people over the line. And then in your case, it's deciding that I'm stepping over that line and I am acting and structuring my life and what I how I give myself in a different way. So let's say you're in the middle of a conversation. Let's say it's with somebody you like. Let's say it's like a good beneficial conversation that you're happy they're having, like you're happy they want to talk about this. You don't want to discourage them from talking about this. Or it's not an educational conversation. It's just like, okay, they're venting or they're in a hard place, but still today is not the day you want to have this conversation. You can say it's best to start by naming the elephants in your room, which is, oh God, I don't want them to think I'm rude. I don't want to hurt their feelings. I don't want to be like awkward. Name that. You know what? Just for a second, let's put a pin in this because, and I don't mean to hurt your feelings in any way. And I don't, and this is really awkward. I'm not trying to be rude. I just can't have this conversation right now. I understand you need to talk about this, or I love that you want to talk about this. Your excitement makes me happy. And I'm hoping you have someone else in your life that you can continue this conversation with, or that you can, you know, who can hold your space right now for this. Unfortunately, it's not me, but I love you, or I appreciate you. That is awkward. That is going to feel uncomfortable. you are going to have a little bit of anxiety about what they're going to return that with, but you are also being an example of adult conversation, how to generously, kindly protect yourself. If you do it with kindness and they reject that, probably because they're feeling uncomfortable, it gives you some more information about them. I encourage you to do that.
Okay.
Good reputations aren't about doing and giving and always being there and always doing the extra mile. It's not. I think good reputations are built on consistency and clarity and good communication and just this kind of stability of, you know what you're going to get when you engage with me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And I encourage you to like seize the day on that.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing up such good, meaty things each and every time and for being so candid. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Is that a hand?
Yes. I so appreciate the thread that you and just had. I know for me personally, like even for this Zoom call, I was hesitant to come on just because in certain circles, I feel like that I might have to be the speaker of Black people. It feels like a burden. It feels like a heavy weight. But also what I am starting to understand, even during this time, is exactly what you just said. The things that you just said, honestly, just there's like a huge weight lifted off of my shoulders. And I'm like, oh, I can actually just be me. I can just show up and just be me. And I can actually just speak my truth without having to, what we kind of say in the Black community, I would just code switching, which is like having to show up in a way in certain environments. And that's exhausting. But like to be able to just be and speak my truth. And if I don't want to participate in that conversation, or that I don't have to give any reason or excuses. And in this time, I'm finding that I'm finding my voice in that, but also that in a weird way, as if I needed the world's allowance, but it's as if I'm being allowed to actually just be me.
Oh, that is so well said. Part of what I would encourage you to experiment with, pick your places, but this container that we have right here is, I would hope you would feel like probably a safer place to do an experiment in. Part of what you can start experimenting with, what did I write down? Oh, trying the privilege on for size. If that makes any sense. From the context of being a woman, we are raised overtly, covertly, subconsciously to feel like we have to justify decisions or explain ourselves. Ancestrally, we haven't had property and agency and money of our own. In the 1970s, women had to get a cosigner for a credit card. And it is a radical act for a woman to just make decisions or just say no, period, and not have to justify and not have to explain. And that is one of the ultimate privileges of whoever is in power. And that's why when women are being taught in these magazines and everything about take back your power, like you don't have to justify or you don't have to explain or be more equitable with your husband or whatever, it's like try that privilege on for size. And I would say that is required for the shift to kind of happen. So if you're in an environment where you're not feeling like there are going to be ramifications, and the facilitator turns and like if the facilitator called you out and was like, so, you know, do you want to contribute anything? What's your opinion on that? Or, you know, but you could say, I'm good right now, I think, of saying no and not explaining beyond that. I think that that's really important, where you can start going, oh, well, I'm going to do what I've seen other people be able to do. And I'm going to test those waters. And not just what I've seen other people want to do, but more importantly, what my gut is whispering for me to do. Justifying is just managing someone else's feeling. And you've had to do that from day one of your life. It's habitual. It's ingrained. It is a form of protection in certain circumstances. Like, I get it. For women too. Don't make the man pissed off at you. Don't, you know, we've had to learn how to navigate through the work world. You've had to learn how to navigate through the world. Unfair right there. Now is the time to start experimenting with that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. I almost want to tear up because you're right. Especially in this time, everyone is looking at themselves, right? But this is making me look at, I guess, weak spots, if you will, or areas of growth. And you are so right. I've always had to manage not me, but the other person's reaction and response to me. So even at the beginning of this time, having those tough conversations with my white brothers and sisters, if you will, and when I feel that they're getting uneasy or on edge or uncomfortable, then I'm finding just automatic response. Then I'm responding in a way to make sure they're okay. At the expense of my own self, I had to take care of them and their feelings to make sure they're not hurt talking about racism. But yeah, for the first time, it feels like I can literally just be me. And if I want to participate, awesome. And if not, then I really don't. I don't have the bandwidth for it. Nor the time, nor do I want to take care of myself in that way right now.
Yeah. The way we start to change this is in the moments when you can say something or not say something or stop a conversation, do it. Mm. As much as possible, whenever you can, be yourself. That's a reclamation of power, and it's a claiming of privilege, in my opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So a thought, something that has kind of come to light as I've had a lot of time over the past couple of months has been, I see a pattern where I feel like when I'm very successful creatively and career-wise, I'm not in a relationship. And when I'm in a really great relationship, my creativity and my careers suffer.
Have you noticed any pattern about what might be behind that or influencing that?
I think part of it is I'm a very committed person. So when I'm in a relationship, I give, 200%. When I was, at a very high point in my career, I was committing, 200%. And it's a question of finding a good balance mm-hmm. in my life and not feeling guilt over, not giving enough to a person or to myself and finding those boundaries.
Do you believe you can have both at the same time?
It kind of was a revelation that maybe I don't.
I'm very familiar with the feeling of like, I'm not giving enough. I don't have enough to give to this relationship or I don't have enough to give to this relationship. And I need to give to myself. And then I need to give to my career. Like I'm very familiar with feeling like drawn and quartered. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that helped me get to a better balance and release some of the guilt is I actually asked the people I was in relationship with, what do you need from me? And very often it was all just in my head of what I thought I needed to give. And when I actually had discussions and parsed out what they needed to feel in relationship with me and having part of my attention, it was much less than what I thought I had to give because I had my own thoughts and standards around that kind of stuff. Have you ever had a conversation with your partner about the state of your relationship and how they feel inside of it with regards to what you are giving?
Not so specifically. I'm definitely like a caregiver and take on a lot. I have been told in the past that one of my ex-partners told me, towards the end of things that he felt like I didn't need him. And I have this fear of being codependent and very independent. And in relationships, I guess I want to feel really needed. Mm-hmm. But I don't let the other person feel needed.
It might be very illuminating for you to have an explicit discussion of explicitly, like, how are ways that I let you feel needed? Or do you feel like, I need you. Is that an issue for you? Because this is a different person, so they may not even have the same needs or wants or issues that the other person had who kind of planted that seed.
You know, I've become very aware of that, so I try to make sure that, you know, my partner, he's aware that, you know, this is a partnership, that we're in a relationship, that it's two ways, and he's not demanding of me at all. It's not a, and I, so I know. So I'm putting a lot of it on me, and then I'm like, well, am I just making an excuse so I'm not successful career-wise, and I am not putting energy creatively because, you know, I have a fear of, I don't know. Yeah. So I start making up all these explanations in my head, and I'm like, okay, I got to step back because getting a little crazy.
So it might be time for an experiment. So you're feeling right now, currently, it's like a lot to the relationship and not as much focused on you and your career and stuff right now.
Right now, yeah. Yeah, there's, yeah.
So what do you need over here in the creativity career part of your life? What are you missing? Are you desiring? What do you wish you had a little more of?
I mean, in the past, I would say time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, over the past several months, a lot of those things have shifted, and I definitely have a lot more time. And maybe it's the permission.
To use the time,
to not, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How would you like to use the time? Because very often we're like, well, I've got to be productive during the time that I have because it's so scarce and rare. Okay, but how is your soul tapping on you going, you know how I'd love to use this time? I'd like to research this, or I'd just like to read these books, or I'd like to sit and stare at the ceiling, like, or take, like, what would your soul like to use the creativity career time for?
That's a good question.
Yeah. So maybe start using some time to start asking yourself, what do I really want? What do I want to do and explore and whatever in that space? Because it might be, I don't really know what I want. I don't know what I need to do. I don't know like how to be productive. So I just, we'll turn all my attention over here. Because there has to be a gravitational force for your creativity and your career for you to be pulled away from other things. I will have clients that are like, I hate my day job. It's like, yes, but you're giving your day job 110% because, you know, you get rewards and acknowledgement and it feels good to check stuff off the list at work. And whenever you think about like spending time on your creativity, it's just really like, yes, but I don't know what I'd even do. It's more vague over here. So I'm going to gravitate towards what I know there's things to do over here. And I get immediate results. So a little more investigation on, okay, well, what does my career mean to me right now? What does my creativity mean to me right now? And then when someone's giving 110% when they don't actually need to give 110%, I find that they've never really experienced what it's like to go to around 85%, not 0%, but, you know, a nice, even, consistent 85% of effort and attention versus 110. Unless you experiment, you don't actually know what a person would be satisfied with. What's the minimal amount they would be that keeps everything? They don't even notice. They don't even notice you're not giving 110%. So it might be interesting to experiment for 2 weeks or for the whole month of August of like, And I would start by even asking your partner, like, what do you love getting from me? And what do you need from me? Like, what indicates I'm giving you enough attention? And what indicates I'm not giving you enough attention? This is just data to consider. And then if they're like, oh, well, you know, I love it when we do Friday nights together and I love doing this and this, and you kind of go, okay. And then you see for a month what it feels like to give them the minimal effective dose. It's not the minimum dose. It's the minimum effective dose where it's like, hey, everybody's happy over here. And I think the person who's going to be most uncomfortable is you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's them. Where you can be like, okay, what is all this discomfort about? And usually has nothing to do with anything else but you, your thoughts, your head, the past, the old knots from childhood and all that It really doesn't have anything to do with what people are demanding from you.
Yeah.
Or even needing or desiring, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a balance. I think sands are always shifting and reproportioning and out. But I think there's something going on with an all or nothing approach.
Yeah.
That actually is not a true thing. It's not all or nothing. And you can absolutely have both things in your life simultaneously. And sometimes when we have tendencies to, I want to feel needed. I want to feel like I'm making a contribution. Sometimes we are over-delivering there because we're not getting the feedback that we want that would indicate to us that everyone's okay. And so we keep delivering more and more in hopes of getting that feedback instead of going to people and saying, you know what I need to hear? I need to hear this every so often. You need to tell me. You need to show me. Have you ever investigated the 5 love languages by Gay Hendricks?
A while back.
Yeah, it was in vogue a while back. But the concept of that is so fascinating in that my husband's main love language, the way he communicates his love and the way that he hears love is physical. And that is not my love language. I need acts of service. You can say everything you want to me. You can give me hugs. But the thing that makes me feel like someone loves me is when they see something and can anticipate a need I might have, like, and does it for me without being asked. That is like the fireworks happen. But we would never have understood how we were miscommunicating until we actually had conversations about, like, oh yeah, this is what I need. This is what I need to hear. This is what I need you to do. Things like this. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, like, I could say all day long to him that I love him and I could do acts of service, but he needs the hugs and the tousling of the hair as I walk by. Like, he needs the physical touch. Mm-hmm. And that's around love. But the same thing applies towards how someone feels needed or what makes them feel like their partnership is secure. If this is in place, if this is in place, if this is happening, they're good. Oh, that's interesting to know, because then I just need to deliver this and some of this and some of this. And then I can trust that they're feeling secure unless they tell me otherwise. And it's probably different what you need to know that you're giving enough. That's the information you don't have right now. Mm-hmm. That's a lot to think about and explore.
I like the idea of, you know, not needing to give 110%. It can be, you know, 85%, 75%. And that's not failing or that's not delivering. And I think it's just kind of accepting that, like being okay with that.
Yeah. And we're not taught that in school. We're taught the opposite. We're taught that we have to give 100% to everything, straight A's in everything. That's not how life functions at all. And then as women, especially as girls, when we're being raised, we're taught to, like, you know, make everybody happy, give all of it away, you know, all that kind of programming. So this is you just kind of unwinding and going, oh, I think I can have everything I want. How do I do that?
Yeah.
And first and foremost, how do I first concentrate on what I'm doing in my crazy head and running the show in a way that it does not need to be run. When I was unwinding from a lot of this, I would literally have moments where I realized, oh my God, I'm getting anxious about not being good or not delivering enough as a wife, you know? And I would literally, I would just go to the source and go, are we good? Like, how are you? Yeah, you're getting everything. Okay. So then this is just old stuff that has nothing to do with the present reality.
Yeah. I think that's definitely the case. I don't feel like there are outside demands put on me. It's just more the internal and how I'm processing and seeing things. Definitely.
Oh, that's so great, because that means you have all the control to change.
Yeah.
And the way you change it is you start to experiment to see if your worst fears, if you're going to die.
Yeah.
The only way you know.
Okay.
Then you can be like, oh, I didn't die. I didn't do that thing that I didn't want to do and I didn't die. So I don't have to do that thing anymore. Good, good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As some of you know, I've recently acknowledged, embraced that I'm non-binary and I'm using they, them pronouns. And this is a big week because I've kind of told most people in my life except for my family. So I'm telling my family this week. And I also have a meeting with an agent today. So I'm not ready to jump agents yet, but in the spirit of what someone mentioned in the mastermind group, you know, just take meetings. So I'm taking a meeting and I just wanted to know if you had any mindset shifts for this whole process today in terms of with my family, with the agent, like any suggestions you have.
Well, what's kind of going on up here around that? What are your concerns?
I'm afraid of being rejected.
Yeah. And what is the story around rejection? Because rejection is neutral. Even the word rejection is actually, you're putting something on to a circumstance of like, oh, we're not matching in this situation. And you're calling it a rejection. But if we're going to use that word, I could argue that rejection is neutral because on the light side, it's a redirection. And on the darker side, you feel not good. So what's the story you're telling yourself about being rejected?
It means I'm a freak and I shouldn't have done this. I should have just kept it a secret.
So if someone in your family or if someone in the industry rejects you, it means you're a freak. Is that true?
No. Anytime we do this, it comes back to self-worth. That's mm-hmm. like every single time we do this. So I don't know if you have suggestions for how to work on that, but it's like, that is my number one problem.
Most it's a people. Core human thing for yeah. a lot of people, not everybody, but so how are you in relationship to your self-worth? In relationship, do you think you're a freak?
Sometimes. Yeah, there's a lot of self-judgment.
Yeah, very often when an external person in the world says something to us and it stings, and I don't mean to make it light by saying, oh, it stings. It can really sting like the stab of a knife stings. It can hurt. But usually the hurt is because that agrees with something we're already saying to ourselves.
Yeah.
It's like, I was right. I am a freak. Because if someone walked along and says, you're a murderer, you would be like, I'm sorry. That would have like no resonance with you. Because that is not a story you've been telling yourself. It's not something that you did. It just holds no weight at all. But if someone came along and implied that you were other, a freak, not worthy, rejected, well, that supports a story that at times you've been telling yourself already. So the self-worth is really a relationship with yourself and the dialogue you have with yourself or the monologue that you're listening to from your lizard brain about yourself.
I have a fraught relationship with my family already. So part of me is like, well, why did I even bother telling them? That's like what I'm expecting. Just like, I shouldn't have even bothered. I'm already planning in my mind that they're not going to like it or they'll be weirded out. And then I'm going to regret having told them.
Why does part of you want to go through with the telling of them?
Because I don't want to hurt their feelings by telling everyone except them and it getting back to them.
So you're making an offering to them.
Like your phrasing.
You're making an offering of, I'm going to share this with you so that you hear it from me. And so that you know that I shared it with you and you didn't have to hear it third hand. So you're making an offering to them. Does it have to taint your offering if they're not ready for it, don't want it, react poorly?
I have no control over that. So I need to remember that I'm telling them for me, not for them. I'm telling them so I can feel comfortable moving forward, and their reaction is none of my business.
Yeah. Now, will it feel bad maybe when you're getting the reaction? Maybe. Will you die from it? No. And their initial reaction does not necessarily mean that's going to be their reaction forever.
That's a really good point.
What you see from them initially is their capability of handling that moment in the moment. When they get some space from it, if they decide to ruminate on it, if they decide to investigate it or learn some things or whatever, they could change and evolve. You have no control over that. We have no idea if they're going to, but they might. It could plant a seed. And there's so many examples of when the seed is planted, the reaction's yet, but then somebody comes back around and says, oh, wow, yeah, I didn't know how to handle it, or I felt weird. And if there were other people that I didn't want to like embrace it, if they weren't going to embrace it, you know, people feel weird around other people too. If you're telling people like in a group, and they could change, but for you at the moment, that's neither here nor there. If they do, it would be great. And if they don't, you're okay. And you're not likely going to feel more pain because of their reaction than you feel right now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You're already dealing with the fact that most likely you have a family that right now isn't going to embrace you. But you already are feeling that. You don't have to go into a room with them and have it acted out to experience those feelings. The feelings come from your thoughts of going, God, I wish I had a different family or a family more capable or more open-minded right now. Who knows? You might be the catalyst that makes your family become a family like that. Still not your job. So you're just going to go and you're going to make an offering, and then you're going to observe their ability to handle it in the moment. And then you're going to go away and go, God, it feels so bad to have a family that can't embrace me fully. And you're not going to die. And after you win your Emmy, they might come around.
That's going to be my mantra, offer and observe.
So how do you then apply all of that to a meeting with an agent?
Tell me.
You tell me.
The reason I'm taking this meeting is because I want to get more comfortable embodying this and carrying myself this way professionally. So I need to remember that's my intention. And that's the first thing. And the second thing is I want to hear from someone other than my current agent what the landscape is out there for someone like me, how they would pitch me.
Yeah. What if that's what this meeting is for? I'm interested in hearing your guidance on this. I'm interested in hearing your take on this. The hard part about your movement in the industry is you just don't know if you're going into friendly territory ever. Mm-hmm. You don't know. And it's sort of like the experience that women have had where you're interacting with a man and you're not sure when you start to interact, is this going to be okay or is this going to get weird? That you kind of have your backup a little bit. So it's totally normal for you to have a little like, oh God, I hope this is a good interaction and not one that leaves me with such a bad taste or something I have to shake off. So I understand that trepidation. But every single time that you encounter someone who's one of your people, and I just mean one of the people who are like, cool, I like you for the soul that you are, and this is great. Let's work together. Oh, it's like a gem. It's so special. And I think a story around, I have the resilience to go through what it takes to find the gems. And I'm going to go into interactions with people open-minded, that they could be one of those gems until they show me that they're not. And then I'm going to extricate myself so that I don't have to put myself through an ordeal that I don't need to put myself through. But if you can get your energy so that you're walking into the situation open-minded and open-hearted to them so that they're not sensing any tightness, you have a better chance of quickly seeing if they're your people or not. Your demonstration of your power is you going through the world with an open heart and going, oh, no, 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 you are not going to close me down. Oh, I'm protected because I have resiliency, I have courage, I have strength, I have love, I have support. But I am here to be open. And if you can't handle it in this moment in your life, great. Bye.
Yeah, that's great.
That's how you advance this movement. That's how you blaze trails.
You are a gem.
Thank you. Everything you do is for you. You're taking this meeting for you. They are lucky to be taking a meeting with you because they need to learn how to get good at taking meetings with non-traditional actors. They need the experience doing that. So you are making them an offering and you're there to get their guidance. It's a meeting of equals here. How can someone reject you if you're not showing up to be accepted? Because you already accepted yourself. So the accepted box has been checked and it has been checked by you.
That's great.
And all those feelings might not feel 100% authentic as far as like, I can't be rejected because I'm not here to be accepted. I'm here to do some business and get some guidance. You might not be able to like live into that 100%, but lean in as hard as you can. And eventually that is going to be the skin that you live in. Mm. How can you not give me something I'm not even asking for? Mm-hmm. And that, you've made this decision. The train has left the station. You're just here to go, oh, I'm on this train. If you ever want to find me, that's basically what you're saying to your family. If you guys want to find me, I'm on this train. That's all. I've picked my train. I'm on my train. You don't need to discuss how you don't like my train. On the train. But if you need to find me, here. I'm here.
Yeah. I feel much different now than when I raised this question. So I feel prepared to go into these conversations now. So thank you, my gem.
I ripped my absentee ballot, so I had to go to City Hall to get a new ballot and get it in on time for primaries. And I'm living at home taking care of who's going through chemo. That was the first time I've exited the home to go see anybody. And like, we get groceries delivered, everything has a decontamination process. We have socially distant, you know, people in the yard, but that's, you know, I don't go anywhere. And so it was a really big deal to have to like go inside a building. And there were other people there also voting, but I chose to go rather than go to a polling place. And this woman had a mask covering her mouth, but not her nose. And so I just kind of turned around and was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Can you cover your nose? It doesn't work if you just cover your mouth. And she just kind of glared at me and said, you know, this is for me because I inhale. So I can't breathe if I cover my nose. And I just, you know, I removed myself from the situation and I left the room. I was like, I turned to the person who was in charge and said, I don't feel comfortable being in this room with this person. I'm going to go stand out over here in another place away from her. Typically for me, like that would be it. Like I removed myself from the situation. I solved the problem. But like for some reason in my brain, like it won't go away. And I keep coming up with like comebacks to her and like things to say to her. And I know it's draining me and it's making me really angry, both at myself and at her for it being such a distraction because it was like a 5-second interaction. And I imagine it mostly has to do with the fact that I do feel very isolated and trapped in my current living situation. And that's in one sense, my choice. And in another sense, dictated by people like her. Mm-hmm. And that's why I can't go be in the world. both because I have someone I have to protect and because the world is a dangerous place right now. Mm-hmm. But I just, I haven't been able to figure out why it won't stop. You know, it's been like a week and it just keeps resurfacing as something that my brain will cycle back to.
Right. You understand that it's not about her. It's about what she symbolizes.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is the benefit, the hidden benefit that you're getting about dwelling on the spin cycle of thought?
Probably that I like have any sort of control in the situation, like as if I could just will it and persuade it that the world would be a different place.
I think that's accurate. I think sometimes when we dwell in a spin cycle, it feels like we're doing something, taking energy. Right. So it feels like we're doing something. Yeah. But also very often when we're doing stuff like, oh, I should have said that, or, oh, if I had done this or this, I wouldn't. You're seeking proof that you're in control when you're not.
Yeah, I just realized by you saying that, I think I ended up resenting feeling like I was the crazy person for asking her to do something that's like just not an argument, and to have no one else step up and support me and just have to like remove myself was just made me feel like I was the person who was wrong.
When you interact with crazy, and I don't mean to take mental health lightly, I'm just using the term crazy of people who have a way of interacting with the world that to you doesn't seem logical, doesn't seem productive, which is your judgment of it, whatever, but you're just like, oh, crazy. When you interact with crazy, it's disorienting. So that's a natural feeling. But when you can say to yourself, God, oh, I just bounced up against crazy, nonlinear, gaslighty weirdness. And of course, it's like when after animals get in a fight, they do that thing where they shake off all the emotion. And that's how they're able to return to baseline. And nobody teaches us humans that we can do that too. But shaking off the emotion, which is hard to do when you're in captivity, go for a run or a walk. But even doing this to yourself is like just something to physically shift your energy, or dancing is a great way to do it. And then realize you have no control, which makes you feel vulnerable, which can make you feel scared. And that is where we're all at right now, including Mask Woman. She is doing things and thinking things and operating in a way that is making her feel in control and safe. And you are trying to do things and operate in a way and think things that make you feel like you're in control and safe. Even the people who are like, there's no thing, I don't need to wear a mask. Well, they're denying it to try to feel in control and feel safe. We all are feeling unsafe. And so we're all doing our own versions of trying to feel safe. So to stop the spin cycle, one of the things is taking a minute and going, okay, that woman, although I never want to interact with her again, she is trying to feel safe. Her bad attitude is a defense mechanism to make her feel more safe. She's just trying. And sadly, that is her best. So while you may not be able to go all the way to compassion for her, if you can't get to compassion, go to pity, at least pity. Because pity is better than resentment and anger and, oh, I wish they didn't exist and blah, blah. Just try to get to pity. Like, well, obviously that's not going to work. Like, why wear the mask if this is how we're wearing the mask? Like, and that's sad. She's walking around looking very silly right now. Mm-hmm. Much sillier than if she just wasn't wearing the mask. And how sad that she can't really commit. She doesn't believe in the mask. She just knows she has to wear it, but she can't even take a stand for not wearing it. Like, oh, that's unfortunate. She feels so conflicted. And she's not happy. Like, she's not at peace, even with her choices. And she's a ball of anger and resentment and fear. And she's tight. You could feel that energy from her. Just like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, whoa, I may be cooped up in my house, but don't have that texture in my life. So at least feel pity. And that can help you put her to rest in your mind. And then it's about dealing with the lack of control.
Yeah.
But the real truth is we don't have control. We don't have control. Control is such an illusion. It's an illusion that you know, even if we take the last 5 years, anybody who has privilege and the illusion of control is part of privilege. If you are feeling like you no longer have control over your life, it's because you had the privilege of having the illusion of control over your life for, let's just say, the last 5 years. But it's never really been there. Life crashes into our lives, and it's always going to do it. And now it's just doing it on a scale that most of us have not had to deal with in our lifetime. But some people have.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, I am dealing with my loss of the illusion of control. And honestly, I think that puts you on stronger ground when you're not living in an illusion. But it's sad. There's feelings around that. And you can feel your feelings. Have you allowed yourself to really feel your feelings around this weird interaction? You gotta just be like, this sucks so hard. It sucks so hard. And the thing about feelings too is it's not usually one and done. It's kind of like grief where it like comes in waves. You know, so you'll be going about your business going, I let that woman go. And then you're taking the shower and you're like, nah. Here this symbol is again. It just means a little more needs to come out. It's okay to be like, I don't like this. And it makes me angry and sad. Yes. Throw a tantrum or two. Tantrums are great. I do them all the time. I just try to, you know, not have them take days anymore, but you know.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay.
I had a little bit of a revelation on my walk this morning about how much I consider part of my story that I am an underdog. I had all these images flooding in of times where people sort of like didn't think anything of me and I proved them wrong. And I think what that has allowed me to do is not put myself, not sort of extrovert myself or my talent. So I protect myself, right, from putting myself out there. It allows me to like just chill out a little bit, just be sort of the surprise hit of whatever. I think it's been a protective measure, and I think I'm ready to let go of that. I was listening to Hamilton this morning and really like the underdogs are coming, and I was like, woo, struck by all this stuff. So I wouldn't mind just sort of playing with that a little bit if you're open.
Yeah. First of all, well done opening yourself up to receive such a wonderful little awareness download about yourself. And it's interesting too, that you also became aware of what you were gaining from it. We always, as bitter of a pill that is to swallow, we're always gaining something from the things we do. Even if it's self-destructive, even if it's like, no, that makes me feel horrible. It's like, well, you're doing it. So you're getting something. And you understood of like, oh, by positioning myself in the underdog category, I get to be the surprise. I get to be triumphant. I get to show them. I get, you know, you get stuff. Mm-hmm. And the reason people don't change, the reason some people would never make the shift from that position to more like, I'm not really the underdog, I'm really quite capable and wonderful, is because they don't want to give up what they're gaining from it. That's why people don't change. And sometimes they don't know, they haven't identified what they're getting from it. So they don't even know what they're giving up. They just feel intuitively that they can't shift. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So surprise, triumphant, showing them, you can get all that stuff in a different dynamic as well. You totally can, without the detrimental underdoggy qualities. And so where does it show up the most?
Two immediate things come to mind. One being my interaction with my talent reps, sort of staying off their radar or flying under the radar purposefully, almost like setting my trajectory under the radar so that when I get a booking, it's like, oh, wow. And then when I turn that booking into a recurring, it's like, what? I stay off their radar quite a lot. From the work that aired earlier this year, haven't even emailed to be like, so the reels are up and they're online. I haven't even communicated that. That's one thing. And then the other is, I think my appearance. I always thought that like I didn't need to appear a certain way. My talent would show them. And then it kind of I remember a casting director workshop company, they said, when I saw you in the hall, I was like, oh, this girl, like, she probably doesn't know anything. And then when you acted, I was like, wow. Yeah. And then what my mentor who passed away earlier this year told me one time that part of my charm is that I don't put a lot of effort in.
You're acting. That's a compliment. I'm not sure to your appearance.
Yeah. So I think part of it is I think I keep myself kind of plain and more of a wallflower than I necessarily need to be. Yeah. So those two things came up immediately when you said that or asked that question.
Okay. So if you were to do an experiment.
Yeah.
Around not business as usual, not that, not wallflower, what would that look like in terms of your talent reps?
I think what that would look like is the first thing that comes to mind is emailing them my demo reel from those two episodes is now up online.
And how would you email? What would the message be? Not verbatim, but like in tone.
Well, I think if we're experimenting around not business as usual, it would be more of my personality showing through, less formalities. I would have to go away with, I hope this finds you well in this unprecedented time. I would have to intentionally have the most sort of colloquial greeting as possible of like, there's no way I'm finding you guys well and happy. You know what I mean? But I hope that a cocktail or a good book is around the corner for you. You know, something along those lines. I'm just sort of spitballing. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you communicate, all your communication within this industry still needs to be on brand.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, if you are putting yourself into the industry primarily as a funny person, we need to hear a little of the funny. We need, you know, that needs to come through. You're always marketing, not in an inauthentic way. This is your authentic essences need to shine through in all of your communication, because every opportunity, even a little email about your clips or whatever, is just to remind them, oh, this is the zest. This is the zest of everybody's zest is different.
Yeah.
You know, and it might be the email might be like, you know what we need right now? A celebration. And this is in celebration of the work that we did last year. It's up. I'm excited. I hope it adds a little happy to your day. Boom.
Ooh, yeah.
And the savvy part of that is I always like to say our work. I always, when I'm communicating with my reps, it was always our booking, our thing, because we're a team working together. The shift we want isn't like, oh, wow, turn that one booking into a recurring. We want them to be on the phone going, that you need to see this girl. She knocks it out of the park and has consistently turned one into two into four into six. Mm-hmm. That's how you want them to be talking about you. And you want someone to see you out in the hall and go, she looks like she knows what she's doing. And then you do know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's memorable too. The wallflower was like, oh, the surprise is memorable. But you know what also is rare and memorable? Someone who looks slick and is great. Because often it's just the look slick part that people got down and the great part, not so much. The reason that's more exciting to people is because it's more in alignment. She looks great. She is great. That's alignment. Yes. Oh, she doesn't, we didn't expect that at all, but she's amazing. But that's dissonance. That's like, oh, okay. Well, did she just have a good night? Does she do that all the time? I don't know. I mean, for someone to say you look like you didn't know anything, that was an underhanded compliment, if it was a compliment at all.
Totally. Yeah.
She was saying like, you surprised me, but not in a great way. So in terms of appearance, what would the opposite of...
I think where I can start is showing up to the classes that I teach with a little more of an outfit. I would like to start playing around with it a little sooner rather than like when an audition comes up.
Oh, yeah.
So perhaps that's accessorizing, you know, just sort of getting a little bit done rather than, well, showing up because we got this is what we got to do. You know, let's get to the work, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I'm in it with you. We're down here together as call. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Your classes are a great place to experiment too. Because mm-hmm. maybe one day you're like, that's a little over the top. But, you know, or ooh, that works really well. I like it. I want you to write two letters. The first letter I want you to write is to your wallflower self. I want you to thank her for all the different ways that she helped you get to where you are. Because she has been the one blazing this trail of your career so far. And she hasn't been doing a bad job. And you want to acknowledge her, praise her for the good stuff. Say, I'm excited to have you witness what's ahead. But now you get to relax. You've done your work. I'm going to ride the motorcycle. You're going to be in the sidecar. You don't have to do anything. I'm sure I will come back to you for roles. Because I know you well. And that's also something that she's given you. You know how to do the, I can be the surprising character. I can be the murderer because no one would suspect you. Ever, you know?
Yeah.
So she's going to come in handy. That's why you want her in the sidecar. We're not locking her up in the attic. So it's like, I'll be revisiting you because you have a lot to offer me. So the second letter I want you to write is a letter that's being written by the new version of you to you, not to your wallflower, but to you. That's like, well, hello, let's talk about what we have in store. Let's talk about how we're going to do this. Let's talk about my plans for you. So that's a letter she's writing to you. And then you write the one to your wallflower. And your new version is the one steering the motorcycle. You're the one holding her waist and back. And then you have your wallflower in the sidecar for future reference. You don't need to be her 24 hours a day, all the time. She's a part of you, but she's a particular essence that's being, and essences that are being emphasized for your career, for your outer facing self. She's the one who's going to the Oscars. You will watch the recording of the Oscars later on the couch with In and Out. That's who you really are. Like, that's you. But you can certainly grab her waist and she will ride that motorcycle.
That image is everything for me. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Yeah. I'm so happy for you. This is a huge turning point in your life. It's one of the demarcations of before and after in your life. Thanks for sharing that.